Case log Mason 2025-0522. May 22, 2025. Augusta, Georgia. The temperature is dropping, the grounds are quiet, and the time is approaching 11:30 p.m. A 28-year-old property manager walks out toward the closed, gated swimming pool of the MacArthur Park Apartments on Little Rock Drive.
Right. His objective is standard community compliance. He sees people who do not belong there, people who have hopped the locked gates after hours. He needs to ask them to vacate the premises.
It is a completely mundane task, a routine interaction written into the standard operating procedures of, you know, thousands of multifamily properties across the country. But minutes later, that property manager is dead. And that sparks a massive, coordinated anti-gang sweep across the state. In this report, Priyanji uncovers how a routine property compliance check transformed into a fatal ambush.
By the end of this deep dive into Priyanshu Edathucker's private case files, the Midnight Ledger, you will understand the critical, hidden operational liabilities lurking in your multifamily portfolios and the exact steps you must take to protect both your capital and your on-site personnel.
We are looking at a fundamental miscalculation here in how physical real estate assets are managed and underwritten.
Exactly. If you hold mid-cap or large-cap residential assets, you are likely operating under a dangerous systemic blind spot.
The raw evidence from the MacArthur Park Apartments is chilling, precisely because of its ordinary origins. The victim in this ledger entry is Cameron Scott Mason. He was 28 years old.
He was a highly respected professional in his field, and, look, more importantly, a devoted father of two children.
We need to be very clear about his role here. He was not a security contractor. He was not law enforcement. He was the on-site property manager. His day-to-day usually involved processing leases, you know, handling maintenance tickets, and managing tenant relations.
And yet, Cameron Mason was simply doing his job that night. He was acting exactly as his position dictated. The perimeter of the pool was secured, the gates were locked, and he observed individuals who had bypassed those physical barriers after hours.
Right, in the context of property management, attempting to enforce a complex's compliance rules is the baseline expectation. He stepped forward to inform them that the pool was closed, that non-residents were not permitted on-site.
He was attempting to protect the asset and ensure the quiet enjoyment of the paying tenants. It is a textbook administrative action.
Which brings us to a glaring operational flaw that Pry highlights in this investigation. It's like navigating a minefield using only a spreadsheet instead of actually looking at the ground in front of you.
Yeah, the commercial real estate industry traditionally treats property managers and leasing agents like administrative customer service workers.
But when a property protocol mandates that a manager enforce a pool closure at 11:30 p.m. against unknown trespassers, you are taking someone trained in tenant relations and dropping them into a tactical enforcement scenario in the middle of the night. You are inadvertently forcing an unarmed civilian to function as frontline security.
It is a massive vulnerability. We are looking at a structural failure to differentiate between administrative property management and physical threat mitigation.
Because when you look at the operational blueprints of these assets, the line item for security is often absorbed by the on-site staff under the guise of community rule enforcement.
Right. The P&L statement looks clean. It looks highly efficient on paper. But the physical reality on the ground is incredibly volatile. Let's break down the core mechanics of Pry's findings inside the ledger.
Pry's investigation into the ledger shows that this wasn't a simple trespassing dispute. It wasn't a misunderstanding with rowdy teenagers sneaking in for a late-night swim.
No, the attackers who breached the MacArthur Park pool were an armed street syndicate. The escalation was immediate.
The moment Mason confronted them and issued the verbal compliance warning, members of this trespassing group drew firearms and opened fire right on the pool deck.
The timeline documented in the Richmond County Sheriff logs moves with devastating speed. Dispatch receives the emergency call at 11:32 p.m. on May 22, 2025.
First responders arrive at the scene shortly after. They find Cameron Mason with fatal gunshot wounds, alongside a second individual who was also injured in the crossfire, and subsequently transported to a local hospital.
Mason was tragically pronounced dead at the scene. Multiple ballistic casings were recovered from the concrete.
The transition from a quiet property inspection to a lethal crime scene happened in a matter of seconds.
There was no negotiation, there was no de-escalation window.
And the legal fallout was sweeping and immediate. Because this homicide involved an innocent professional executing his workplace duties, it catalyzed a massive joint investigation.
The Richmond County Sheriff's Office partnered directly with Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr's Gang Prosecution Unit. They quickly determined that the suspects were active members and associates of a local criminal street gang known as Extort Anybody.
Listen to the exact words from Attorney General Chris Carr, because they highlight the stark injustice of the operational failure here. He stated publicly, Cameron Mason was an innocent individual who was simply doing his job, and he should never have lost his life that day.
The state recognized immediately that this was not an interpersonal dispute. This was a targeted act of extreme workplace violence against a civilian employee, someone who was placed in an impossible situation by standard industry protocols.
That joint investigation culminated rapidly. On August 12, 2025, a Richmond County grand jury handed down a sweeping, multi-defendant indictment.
Right, five members of the Extort Anybody gang were indicted. Cameron Barber Harris, Taylor Preston, Zamir Dent, Christopher Morton, and Jamonte Douglas.
The severity of the charges reflects the brutal nature of the ambush. Malice murder, felony murder, aggravated assault, cruelty to children in the first degree.
And multiple violations of the Street Gang Terrorism and Prevention Act. This wasn't just a prosecution, it was a targeted dismantling of a violent hybrid operation in Augusta.
But while the state addressed the criminal element, the real estate sector was left staring at a glaring systemic blind spot.
Yeah, the people writing the operating procedures for these properties fundamentally misunderstood the threat environment.
Which brings us to the core analytical tool Pree has constructed in his report, detailing what he calls the after-hours compliance paradox.
This is the data-driven framework that institutional investors and developers need to apply to every asset in their portfolio right now.
Pree identifies three specific operational vectors that determine the physical threat index of any property rules inspection.
Exactly. The first vector is enforcement timing. Are your staff conducting checks during daylight business hours, or are they enforcing rules late night, specifically after 10:00 p.m.?
The second vector is staffing level. Is the enforcement being handled by solo property staff, a two-person team, or contracted armed law enforcement?
And the third vector is the engagement policy. Is the protocol direct verbal confrontation, observe and report only, or automated CCTV voice warning and remote access?
Wait, let me stop you there, because Pree mentions this outputs a 98% critical calculated safety exposure index. How does Pree actually calculate that? I mean, what is the mathematical difference between a property manager asking someone to leave the pool at 4 p.m. versus 11 p.m.? On paper, it's the exact same task.
On paper, yes. But in reality, the compounding risk is exponential.
Right. Because at 4:00 p.m., the environment is highly visible. You have natural surveillance from other tenants walking their dogs or coming home from work.
Exactly. The psychological profile of a daytime trespasser is usually opportunistic. Maybe a tenant's guest who overstayed. But after 10:00 p.m., visibility drops to near zero. Natural surveillance vanishes.
And the psychological profile of the trespasser shifts dramatically. Individuals bypassing locked gates in the dark are doing so with deliberate intent to remain undetected, often bringing illicit activities with them.
When you add the second vector, solo staffing, you remove the deterrent effect of numbers. A single employee walking into the dark has zero leverage.
And then you add the third vector, the engagement policy. If standard procedure mandates that this solo employee must issue a direct verbal warning, I mean, must verbally confront these individuals, you are essentially lighting a match in a powder keg.
Precisely. When you adjust those vectors to match the MacArthur Park incident, late night timing, solo property staff, and direct verbal confrontation with unvetted individuals, Pry's after hours compliance risk simulator outputs that 98% critical calculated safety exposure index.
The remaining 2% is essentially blind luck. Enforcing rules under these specific metrics mirrors the exact conditions that cost Cameron Mason his life.
It transforms your administrative staff into active targets.
It's a mathematically catastrophic liability. You are asking a single human being to absorb the entirety of a property's security risk in the dark. For any asset owner, relying on this outdated model of physical staff enforcement is a ticking clock. But here's where his investigation takes a completely unexpected turn.
Moving on to our next major pillar, how Price systematically navigated these operational hurdles. How Pree saw what the spreadsheets missed is deeply tied to his specialized operational perspective.
Because traditional underwriting is a purely mathematical exercise.
Yeah.
Right? It zeroes in on financial metrics.
Exactly. It looks at the cost of on-site staff versus the cost of automated systems or third-party security, and it predictably chooses the path of least immediate capital expenditure.
It completely ignores the massive physical and legal liabilities of asking solo staff to police common areas under the cover of night.
But surely insurance premiums factor in crime rates for the area, right?
That's the question. How can a financial model completely miss a gang threat moving onto a property?
That is the exact blind spot Prey is targeting. Insurance models and financial underwriters look at historical crime data in a specific zip code. They look at the construction of the asset.
Right. They see a locked iron gate around a pool and check a box that says secured.
But what they do not audit are the standard operating procedures of the property staff. A financial model cannot price in the proximity of an armed street syndicate if it assumes the locked gate keeps them out.
It cannot calculate the ballistic risk of a pool deck because it assumes a 28-year-old manager is never going to be in a tactical standoff.
That is where Pree's dual authority becomes critical. He operates as both an institutional commercial real estate investment advisor and a boots-on-the-ground licensed realtor.
He is constantly bridging the gap between the macroeconomic abstractions of a portfolio and the micro-level physical realities of property management.
Right. He uses this unique vantage point to identify the operational threats that absentee owners and purely financial underwriters are completely blind to. He sees the spreadsheet, but he also sees the property line.
And that vantage point changes everything. Because when you rely on an underwriter who has never walked a property at midnight, they will always tell you that hiring a security guard hurts your net operating income.
They don't realize that treating your property manager as a free security guard carries a liability exposure, not just in terms of human life, which is paramount, but in devastating legal and reputational damage that will permanently impair the asset.
What Pree is reporting from the ground in central Ohio is that this extreme vulnerability isn't isolated to Georgia. The geography changes, but the operational flaw is identical.
Whether you are managing a portfolio of short-term rentals in Columbus or a massive multi-building multifamily complex in the broader Midwest, the risk profile of physical staff enforcement remains a critical liability nationwide.
The moment a human being is required to step into a dark common area to enforce a rule against an unknown entity, that 98% critical exposure index applies.
Exactly. The gang dynamics might vary by city, but the vulnerability of a solo employee walking into the dark does not.
As Pree points out in this week's perspective, regional property management groups are no longer waiting for institutional owners to catch up. They are heavily advocating for immediate structural changes.
They are demanding clear no-confrontation policies for property staff dealing with non-resident compliance issues.
They are realizing that preserving the asset's value cannot come at the cost of the staff's safety.
Operators historically push managers to enforce noise complaints or pool closures late at night because unaddressed disturbances lead to broken leases. Broken leases hurt the bottom line.
So to save a few thousand dollars a month on professional security, they send a leasing agent out with a flashlight.
And they are recognizing that the observe and report model is the absolute limit of what should be expected from civilian property management. The shift must move towards specialized late-night security monitoring.
The reliance on the human element for after-hours enforcement is a legacy protocol that has proven deadly.
The liability of a wrongful death lawsuit, the trauma to the community, the immediate drop in property value, I mean, these far outweigh the cost of upgrading your security infrastructure.
We have to look at the absolute bottom line of Prize Ledger. The physical threat index of relying on human staff for late-night compliance is a catastrophic liability. Enforcing rules under these outdated metrics creates active targets out of innocent professionals.
This is the definitive action item derived from this investigation. You must transition your properties from physical staff enforcement to automated monitoring immediately. The technology exists to completely mitigate this threat vector.
Implementing CCTV with remote, two-way voice warnings allows you to issue compliance demands without ever putting a human being within ballistic range.
Utilizing centralized remote access controls ensures perimeters remain physically locked down. Establishing strict no-confrontation protocols for your on-site teams is no longer optional.
It is a mandatory operational upgrade to protect your capital, shield your liability, and most importantly, safeguard the lives of the people operating your assets.
Cameron Scott Mason was an innocent man who was simply doing his job. He followed the procedures written for him by an industry that failed to measure the true risk of the dark.
If a simple locked pool gate and a routine compliance warning can trigger a lethal gang ambush, what other routine operational assumptions hiding in your property's P&L are actually active physical threats waiting to detonate.
But the analysis doesn't stop here. If you want to dive deeper into the data before the next bell rings, make sure to hit that subscribe or follow button right now in your favorite podcast app. If you found value in tonight's reporting, leave us a 5-star review. It helps other listeners find their way to the table. For exclusive updates, show notes, and deep dives, visit our website at bearinvestors.com. Until next time, stay sharp and keep your books balanced.